Aubrey Masango on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and DStv channel 856.
6 minutes after 9 o'clock, and thank you so much for staying with us. If you were listening to the conversation that I've just had in the previous hour together with Kyle Cowan, investigative journalist at News 24, you probably have more questions, yeah? But I like that. I like questions. I like questions. And I'm really looking forward to your analysis of that conversation as we continue. But in this hour, I'm going to be speaking to the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, in a few moments' time. And you will have heard in a press briefing that he gave earlier on at efforts to try and digitize more than 350 million documents that the Department of Home Affairs is responsible for. Some people have said, but this should have happened many, many, many years ago. Well, it didn't. And it's happening now, and I think it's a good thing. 10,000 students will be employed in this particular effort, 2,000 of which will be, employed even as early as this Friday. 2,000 of which will be employed as early as this Friday. And the idea is to try and, streamline and digitize the process of storing, but also of retrieving documents for you and I as South Africans and all of the other functions that Home Affairs has. Secondly, there is also a serious effort at, regulating things that have now been clearly seen as unregulated in the Home Affairs space. And one of the things that is going to be happening is that a new transition visa is going to be put in place, particularly for certain nationalities that have proven themselves to be unreliable in the, expected behavior as far as transition and moving between nations is concerned. And Minister Aaron Motsoaledi is on the line to give us a better understanding of all of these issues. And I'd love for you to join us, of course, if you would like to, on 011-883-0702 as I speak to the Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, thank you so much, sir, for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Yes, good evening, Aubrey, and good evening to the listeners.
Thank
you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come and talk to us. Talk to us about this mammoth task. I mean, in a previous life, Dr. Motsoaledi, I was involved in the business of records management, the creation of systems for filing documents and so forth. So I have a little bit of understanding about this process. And then you go to a more involved process of digitizing that information that needs to be classified in specific ways and so forth, according to the National Archives rules and so forth. 350 million documents, did I hear right?
Absolutely. 350 million records. This is records of birth, ID, passport, marriage, and even death. They stretch back from 1895. And they are all paper records. And every year they increase. Remember that there are about 1 million babies born in South Africa every year.
Yep.
So every year the records have to increase. They are not static. They'll keep on increasing.
And of course there are deaths, there are divorces, there are all sorts of other activities that need to be recorded by Home Affairs. So we used to say in the past that, yes, records are alive. They are living, breathing organisms, as it were. How are you going to undertake this huge project, and who's going to be involved?
Yeah, we are going to engage 10,000 unemployed graduates. I had you say students. It's not students.
Right.
is people, it's unemployed graduate, people who have graduated in the field of IT, document management and all such areas. Those who have already qualified in those fields and will engage 10,000 of them for a period of 3 years, and they'll be on a stipend, the entry level of which they'll be paid 5,000 rand a month. But those who have got technical expertise, who will be technical advisors, will be paid 9,500. Those who will be able to strike managerial positions will be paid 14,250 as a stipend. So the amount of money we're having, 2.4 billion rand over the next 3 years, 90% of it will go to pay for these stipends, and the other 10% will be for logistics and for buying equipment to help us to do this work.
Why are you doing this, Dr. Motsoaledi?
Oh, many, many, many big reasons, Aubrey. Firstly, if you have ever gone to Home Affairs and applied for an unabridged birth certificate, you'll understand.
Yeah.
Or if you have ever gone to Home Affairs and applied for an unabridged marriage certificate, you'll understand. Or if you have ever gone to Home Affairs to try and do what is called an amendment or a rectification, maybe your same name is spelled wrongly. You want it to be corrected. Maybe you then tell us that your date of birth is wrong, which gives you a wrong age. That may force you to retire before time or never to retire when you are supposed to. All those rectifications. Now, for Home Affairs officials to do all that work, they need to go to the archives to check what the original records about you are saying. They can't just make any changes as you are asking, because it will be chaotic. It will be very dangerous, actually. They must see the original records, what they are saying. Now, just imagine them going to search among 350 million manual paper records for that type of information. So it takes a long time, and you have got to come to Home Affairs many times. Just imagine that information being on a computer and the fingertips, where they just press, and there's the information. It will be very, very, very good for you, because everything will run smoothly. Imagine a matriculant who want to write matric, and they want to take an ID, and an unabridged birth certificate is wanted, and the department has to go through this process of searching and searching and searching. Many people get irritated. Actually, I know it, because they write me very abusive letters because they believe we just don't do work. We are not doing our work, not realizing that we've got to rummage among 350 million records. So that's how important it is. But lastly, open these records, which must never be lost. Some of them are actually fading away because of the age of the record. Remember, it's paper. They just fade away.
Yeah. So one of the things that I understand about, you know, the
where they'll tell you that, look, my great-grandfather, what was 8 years ago, this is what happened, and I'm told that if I get such and such a document, then I'll be able to inherit this land. And
we've lost Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Let's reconnect with Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. The minister just explaining to us a gargantuan project of wanting to digitize 350 million documents under the auspices of Home Affairs, dating back to 1895. Yeah, I'll be asking about what about the documents prior to that era. I'm interested to understand the records management filing system that is going to be put in place, the standardization of that, who's going to be in charge of that, because there is a specific way of looking for documents in the government setting. One of the things that I had an experience of was that in certain departments, the mandatory records management system had been abandoned, to the point where to find a document, you would need to be beholden to a particular individual who's been in that particular department for years. Who knows where the bodies are buried, as it were, and would then be able to find that document for you. In other words, there was the abandonment of a standardized system of search and retrieval of documents. Now, any government department, any organization of any considerable size must have a system that is not necessarily dependent on an individual to be able to find documents. And that's part of the reason why at the Department of Home Affairs, documents were so hard to find, because there were so many different personalized document retrieval systems. And I'm looking to find out about how that process is going to be streamlined. Who's in charge of it? I know that the skills that used to be at the Department of Archives at the main repository in Pretoria have all but been depleted. So I'm interested to find out from Dr. Arun Motsoaledi. He's back. Dr. Arun Motsoaledi, thank you so much for this. And I was just explaining to our listeners the sheer hugeness of this project. The department or the Statistics South Africa engages in a project of trying to digitize 5 million documents per year. They hardly ever get it right. How was the decision to give a timeline of 3 years for a project of this size, an ongoing growing project? It's very organic. How did you come to the conclusion that 3 years would be sufficient and 10,000 employees would be sufficient for this job? Dr. Motsoaledi? Why am I not in contact with Dr. Motsoaledi? All right, let's see if we can't.
No, I can hear you.
I can hear you now too, Dr. Motsoaledi. Go ahead, sir.
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you too. Did you hear my question?
Yes, I had your question.
Right, go ahead.
Stats SA has been helping us to digitize these records, but they are only able to finalize 5 million records per annum.
Yeah.
Now imagine you have got 350 million and they are increasing by more than 1 million every year and only 500 are being digitized. It's going to take us a lifetime.
Indeed.
So we developed a project plan which we sent to the presidency and to Treasury. And according to that project plan, we believe we can finish this work in 3 years if we hire 10,000 unemployed graduates.
Right. And what of the system, the filing system, the retrieval system, the system of treating live documents versus archived documents? I mean, there's a whole science that is attached to records management that I discovered some years ago had been abandoned in some cases, to the effect that documents couldn't be found unless that one Tani who sits in one office obscurely there, who's the only person in that department who knows where certain files are, is the only person that can find that file. Where are you going to retrieve that kind of information from in order to be able to trace documents, to be able to place them in a particular system? I don't know if you understand my question, Dr. Motsoaledi.
I understand very faintly because I'm not well versed with the issues of documentation, documentation management and filing. But we have got three different archives in Home Affairs.
Yeah.
One here in the central Pretoria, the others scattered all over, unfortunately, Aubrey. I don't want to disclose that information publicly.
Sure. Yeah.
As to where our archives are.
Indeed.
For security reasons.
Yes.
Now, and then in each of the provinces, we also have some archives there, especially most of them are in Gauteng, Western Cape, and Northwest. I don't understand why Northwest, but Western Cape and Gauteng is unattendable. That's where the center of life was during the apartheid era. But more so, the records of 1800 and something belong only to white nationals, because blacks were not really regarded as South Africans during that time. So we do have the areas of those records. Our biggest problem is how to find records of Oprima Tango at the time you want them,
yes,
or the records of Aaron Mutualeni. Sometimes they are put in a particular order. Other times it takes about 6 months looking throughout this paper-based record,
yes,
in order to find what you are looking for.
Yes.
So we believe once we particular order, there will be massive training. That's why the people are looking for are not just any unemployed graduates, but these unemployed graduates who graduated in the specific field of IT, information technology, and document management.
Yeah. No, I think you will discover, Minister Mutualeni, that the records management space is a monster, logistically and just the kind of detail that you're going to have to, stay close to is an absolute nightmare. And I wish you the best as far as that is concerned. We also hear of the fact that there is the introduction of a transition visa for specific nationalities. Talk to us a little bit about that. I heard you speak in your press delivery this afternoon.
Yeah, look, there are countries which require a visa to come to South Africa. There are countries that come visa-free. They differ. But there is something called the transit visa. That means you are not coming to that particular country, but you are transiting through it to go to another country. Now, you are aware that a lot of people who visit our neighboring countries, Eswatini, Lesotho, Mozambique, Botswana, they like transiting through O.R. Tambo International Airport. Now, Home Affairs Department at some stage, to facilitate their movement, decided that no transit visas are needed because they are not coming to South Africa.
Yes.
Once they alight, they alight the airplane, they are moved through the airport, to the, what you call a transit launch. From the transit launch, they then get the plane to their next destination. Now, you may be aware, or you might have seen, that on the 15th of June, I was called during the night to the airport to rush.
I remember
there
that. There
were Pakistani nationals there, yes, who, on the way to the transit launch, they just divert, deviate, and run, and somebody's directing them through the airport. They found passages, you know, the passages that were made fire hydrants. They get in there and they go into the rooms. There are some rooms there they use, walk through the roof of the airport, and somewhere find a way to get into a country illegally. Then they've arrived in South Africa.
Yeah.
Some actually continue into the transit launch. They actually indeed take a plane to the neighboring country, but when they arrive there, they found an illegal way to come through our porous borders back into the country. Now, we found that being practiced by people from Pakistan and Bangladesh, so we've decided to bring back the transit visa for them. They can, whether they are visiting another country or not, if they want to transit through South Africa, they must apply for a visa. We must agree that they must transit through the country or refuse. That no, you can't transit through our country. Choose something else and give reasons for that.
What does that do for the bilateral sort of relations between South Africa and Bangladesh? What does that decision for these transition visas, which some may argue is a little draconian, given the fact that a few people have done this, and why should the rest of us then be subjected to this? Has that affected the bilateral relationships between Bangladesh and South Africa, Pakistan and South Africa?
We've informed them, but Aubrey, bilateral relations between countries, in my experience, every country enter into bilateral relationship for their own interest, not for the interest of the other country. That's how international diplomacy is conducted. You do it in the interest of your country, not in interest of the other person. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
So we have to look into South Africa's interest here in terms of our security. What proof do they have that it's a few people? The information we have got is that it's not few.
Yeah. So yes. Questions are being asked about whether or not we are going to see those documents that are being digitized, also digitized at the various embassies around the world, where South Africans may be connected to those embassies. Will Home Affairs be reaching out to embassies all the way to all of the posts where we have ambassadors?
No. All their documents come end up here in South Africa. We'll digitize them here at back home. Remember, the embassies is just areas where people are applying. They lodge their applications there. A decision is mostly taken back here at home. And whatever records are stored, they are stored here at home. So we are not going to digitize records who are in embassies. They'll bring them here. We'll digitize them here. And if any embassy wants information, they'll get to the computer and found information about documents that were digitized here back at home.
We are also hearing, of course, of the fact that there are documents that have been fraudulently obtained. I mean, you and I have had conversations in the past around this matter, that documents around the naturalization, the provision of citizenship for certain individuals, and I remember you talking about the Bushiri matter, the Guptas, and so forth. How is this digitization process going to help in unearthing, if possible, more of such acts of corruption, Dr. Motsoaledi?
Well, the acts of corruption of the 14 South African documents won't be solved by digitization only. It will be solved by quite a number of actions that you are taking. Digitization will definitely contribute, because when you give us information when you are applying, getting to the records will help us. Just to give you an example, Aubrey, there's a gentleman who wants demanded to apply for the smart card, and he claimed to be a South African, and he tried to produce information to prove that he's a South African. The people who were serving in Home Affairs were very doubtful. They went to this record. It took them a long time, but they went to the record, and they found that he arrived in South Africa via Teba. You remember the institution called Teba?
The
Employment Bureau of
Yes,
which was recruiting people from all over Southern Africa,
yes,
and the rural areas of the country to come into the mines. It was found in the records that he came through that Teba, meaning that he's definitely not a South African. He was lying, and the records helped us to prove that. Now, it took a long time to prove that. Now, imagine if they were digitized, somebody just pressed the computer and say, no, please, you are playing games with us. These are the records about you. You are wasting our time. And then the problem would have been solved. But the other methods we are using, Aubrey, to make sure that our records are not, our documents are not stolen, is what I've announced today about the passport, where I said we have changed the method of collecting a passport from Home Affairs. Presently, you can apply for a passport in any Home Affairs office, and you can go and collect it in any office, and you can send any third party to collect the passport for you. That's what brings into being, since, like, if you remember, Lebogang from Bangladesh. Now, the new method we are going to use, the office where you apply for a passport is only the office where you go and collect it. And you cannot send anybody to collect the passport for you. You must come personally, because after printing, your passport won't be activated. You can only activate it by putting your fingerprint there.
Mm.
And we'll compare your fingerprint with your photo and the face that is standing there in front of the counter to activate the record. In other words, your fingerprint, which is must be in our national population register, which must be in our population register. Your face, which you are looking at now, they must all correspond, and then you activate that passport to take it. In that way, it will be difficult for people who are foresters. If you to find who you can send and say, please collect my passport immediately after printing, that passport won't be activated. It will be of no use to you. You have got to activate it with your own fingerprints.
So if I'm sick, if I'm ill, and I, how do we deal with that? I mean, can I not send my wife or my son to come and fetch my passport?
Okay.
I was saying that if I'm ill, for example, I'm incapacitated in one way or the other, would I not be able to send my son or my wife to come and fetch my passport for me?
No, you won't.
Okay.
And we know it's an inconvenience, but unfortunately,
yeah.
For the security and integrity of our passport, no, you won't.
Yeah. In fact, I had the same conversation yesterday around what seems to be a tightening of regulations as far as movements and documentation is concerned with the bank yesterday around the issue of the possible grey listing of South Africa's financial sector. And I see that there is a very, very strong move by banks to try and comply with certain international banking regulations that would mitigate against us being relegated to this grey listing. And part of that is records management. Oh, I don't know what's happening. Why we are losing the minister. Shall we take a break and then get in touch with the minister again? Let's do so.
702 podcasts are on 702.co.za.
25 minutes to 10 o'clock, and my guest is Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, Minister of Home Affairs, and we're talking about the digitization process that the Department of Home Affairs is embarking on. 350 million documents, 10,000 graduates will be employed over a three-year period to do this. I think that they're about to be rudely awakened to the realities of the logistics involved in this. I think it's going to be an ongoing issue. 2.4 billion rands has been set aside for this whole project. And the minister just going through the thinking and the processes that will be followed as far as this is concerned. Minister, thank you very much once again for joining us. I was still interested to hear as to whether or not there is a connection between what we are seeing banks with regards to FICA regulations doing, calling us all back to to validate our bona fides, as it were, as far as documents are concerned, and what you are doing at Home Affairs. And I told that this has to do with the possibility of being relegated to grey status if we are not compliant as a financial sector. Is this in any way connected to that, Dr. Motsoaledi?
Yeah. You see, Aubrey, the banks doing what they are doing to secure their information. I can tell you, if Home Affairs doesn't, if it's not Home Affairs that starts first, when the banks come in, the proverbial horse has bolted. Remember, all the records the banks have got about you, they actually obtained them from Home Affairs.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, if the documents in Home Affairs are fraudulent, whatever the bank will be working on will be a fraudulent document. And they've got no way of knowing it. If you come and say, I'm Oprima Sango, when you are actually Aaron Motsoaledi, and you are registered in the bank as Aaron Motsoaledi instead of Oprima Sango, the banks will work with that and there will be knowing you as that. So it's Home Affairs that must clean and put its house in order and make sure that our documents are authentic and they are respectable and they can be trusted.
One of the things that the consultant I was speaking to at the bank, as I went to go and hand in my documents, and once again, they wanted me to be present physically so that they could do a thumbprint check and all of those things against the documents at Home Affairs, interestingly enough, was that they've come to understand that there are people that are outsourcing their bank accounts. In other words, Aaron Motsoaledi gives over his bank account to Aubrey Masango because Aubrey Masango, for whatever reason, is unable to open a bank account. And then they see certain transactions that are taking place in that bank account that are dodgy or unexplainable. And that is why they are calling for people to come in physically to be seen as to whether or not. And what they're finding is that as they call for more and more people to come and be compliant as far as FICA is concerned, there is a reluctance for people to come in person. Are you finding that from the Home Affairs side of things, that what the banks are saying, albeit at that level, is true?
Well, at the moment, because it's only the ID, by the way, Audrey, where you must come personally. The passport, you can send anybody. At the moment, because you can send anybody to collect, we haven't seen problems. I suspect you are going to find them when people must come and collect the passport themselves, there's going to be a lot of reluctance. For instance, if somebody acquired a passport, like Lebogang of Pakistan, they can't come back and collect it because they'll be caught.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of reluctance, and we're going to find lots of people who applied for their passports wrongly. The last thing about that, Aubrey, the people who were defrauding our passports, remember the Pakistani national we arrested in our Kruger Stop offices on the 24th of March. The people who, South Africans who sold their IDs, they discover when they go into the banks. Banks no longer serve you. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah, I'm still on, yes. They no longer serve you on the basis of the ID document you give them. They go into, they are connected to our National Population Register. They go into the National Population Register and then look for the photo there, and they found a different photo. The name says Lebogang Ndlovu, but when they look at the photo, it belongs to a Pakistani national.
Mm.
And so the bank started realizing those differences. That's why they have to stand up and say, let's make sure that we correct our records. But it must all start in Home Affairs.
I don't know
that's
if you
very important.
I don't know if you are aware of this situation, and it you know, it was making the rounds about a month or two ago of a Malawian national who was running his own sort of passport registration process here in Johannesburg. I think it was in Kempton Park, was arrested by police officers, was then released, and the same police officer finds him walking the streets and says, well, how can you be walking around? And this guy had machines, he had photos, he was really running a fraudulent Home Affairs business in Kempton Park. I mean, are you aware of that, Dr. Motsoaledi?
Yes, and I don't think it's Kempton Park, it's Hillbrow.
Oh, is it Hillbrow? Yeah.
It's not a Malawian, it's a Zimbabwean.
Okay.
Because I actually went into the cells to see him.
Right.
He was arrested. He was actually, well, the commonly people say he was running a parallel Home Affairs. He was actually running a parallel everything in terms of documents, because he was producing bank cards. Home Affairs doesn't produce bank cards, but he was producing bank cards on behalf of banks. He was producing driver's licenses. Home Affairs don't produce driver's licenses. They are produced by the Department of Transport. He was producing that. He was producing SASSA cards. SASSA cards are not produced by Home Affairs, by SASSA. And of course, yes, he was producing IDs and passports. But some of the passports he's having are from other countries, not South African passports. So he was also defrauding other countries' passports, that gentleman. And of course, we know about it, and we are busy with him together with the police.
So the security efforts that are underway at the moment at Home Affairs, the digitization process, all of this that is taking place, is part of the strategy to be looking out for those kinds of criminals, Dr. Motsoaledi, who are running their own, I'm going to say home affairs, but I think based on what you've just said now, but their own registration sort of industry, illegal registration industry and production of documents industry, is that part of the job, or is it only just focused on home affairs and what home affairs needs to be doing?
No, it's to close them down such that they don't, because all the original documents of, I'm repeating, start in home affairs. Your bank account started in home affairs, your passport in home affairs, your marriage certificate started there, death certificate, everything that you do, all transactions, what the police are having started in home affairs, what the Department of Justice is having started in home affairs. So it is home affairs that must make sure that we have got an authentic document. There is something I actually forgot to mention. At the moment, all South Africans on the National Population Register, we have got two of their biometrics. We have got a fingerprint and a photo. All of you in our National Population Register, you will find your fingerprint and your photo. They are stored in a system called HANIS, Home Affairs National Information System. But we don't want to rely only on that, because that's where fraud starts. We are now migrating to a new system called ABIS, Automated Biometric Information System. On top of the fingerprint and your photo, we are adding an iris recognition.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we're going to have to look into things so that they can make sure it's Aaron Motsoaledi. Yeah, yeah. Why have we taken so long? Wow. Chris, you're going to need to come back and give me some time off. We've lost Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. I was going to ask the question, why have we taken so long to get to this point where we're digitizing our documents? Why? I mean, surely many of the issues that are being attacked by this whole process would have been dealt with a long time ago. Yeah? I'm interested to hear your thoughts on 011-883-0702. Would love to hear your thoughts, perhaps as we continue in this conversation. Do you want to quickly give me a break, and then maybe we'll once again get in touch with the minister. Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi is my guest. He's Minister of Home Affairs. We're talking about far-reaching security, digitization processes taking place at Home Affairs at the moment, and he joins me. Dr. Motsoaledi, I want to ask you this question coming through from a listener very quickly, because I think it's an important one. He says, there's a huge mistake we're making in the analysis of illegal foreigners in our country. He says, we keep thinking that the problem is only about those entering the country illegally, but the horrific truth is that a huge chunk of legal foreign nationals here have entered South Africa on tourist, IR study visas, then acquired legal stay through fraud, have legal status but are involved in illegal dealings. To what extent is your analysis of the immigration challenges we have, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, perhaps as is explained by this particular listener?
I'm not sure why the listener says it's not analysis. By the way, Aubrey, I'm the one who released that report, and I even know names. You might just have analyzed. We haven't analyzed. We have reviewed. You might have forgotten that I announced in February 2021 that I'm putting together a team chaired by the former Director General in the Presidency, Dr. Tricia Slubisi, who was working with the people who used to be investigators in the Scorpions, and then people who are working for SIU, even people who were investigators for the Zondo Commission. We put them together and say they must analyze all the visas and documents and permits that were issued by Home Affairs since 2004. And they have released, I called them to release that, their findings in Parliament. And the things the listener are saying are contained in that document. We even have the numbers. We even have the names of some of them. And the recommendation is that we appoint a multidisciplinary team, which will consist of advocates, data analysts, forensic experts, who must work on this thing, because there are going to be dockets developed. We are going to have to search for people. We are going to have to deport some. We are going to jail some. So that information, we have got it. It's not an analysis. It's a review.
Yeah. I suppose the listener is basically saying that sometimes the focus is that the culprits here are the illegal immigrants. I don't know what we're going to do with the situation. Maybe we should digitize. Number 1-888-302 is the number to dial. I'm going to ask many of you asking how the ZEP story is going. I'll ask the minister about that, and then also get a sense, perhaps, of what he has to say about the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Zimbabwe giving a particular message to Zimbabwean nationals in South Africa about perhaps coming back home and so forth, and whether or not that is a bilateral sort of effort by South Africa and Zimbabwe. You'll know that issue is an ongoing one. But those are some of the questions that I'm going to be asking the minister as we try to get him back online. It is a very difficult line, because I'm told that the minister is traveling, and we are trying to get a hold of him there. Dr. Motsoaledi, I'm sorry. It looks like we are victims of the mistakes of technology here. But let me quickly ask. The issue of the ZEP is gaining quite a lot of traction, and I see that the Minister of Foreign Affairs was in South Africa yesterday, had some messages to impart to Zimbabwean nationals. What did you make of some of the things he had to say, and is this something that the South African government and the Zimbabwean government are cooperating in?
Yes, look, they are running a government. They understand us. Those who don't understand us are those who don't want this country to move forward. But there are also those who are beneficiaries of illegality in the country. The Minister of Foreign Affairs in Zimbabwe is running a government. He knows exactly what we mean. And actually, their rules are much tighter than ours. They know very well that back in Zimbabwe, they are having tighter rules about immigration than we have got in South Africa. So he understands us very well. That's why he made a statement that is appealing to all the Zimbabweans to please respect the laws that are in South Africa. Because he knows that back in Zimbabwe, he will also demand the same for anybody who enters Zimbabwe.
We've just had a ruling by the Constitutional Court around the qualifications and the ability of locally trained attorneys in South Africa, and whether or not they can function and work in South Africa. Tell me your thoughts about that, Dr. Motsoaledi.
Well, this is surprising. How many South Africans do you know who studied in America, who studied in Britain, who are now studied in China, who are studied in Ukraine, who are studying in Australia, all over the world? Did those South Africans, after study, demand that they now want to be permanent residents or citizens of those countries simply by virtue of studying in that particular country? Where have you ever heard that? It's shocking us, because it's only in South Africa where such demands are made. When you go to study in America, immediately you finish. The day you finish, they ask you to go back home unless they need your services. You can't go to their courts and challenge them and say, I've studied in your country, now you must give me a job here, or you must allow me to stay here. And the Constitutional Court was right, because what has been being asked for is absolute madness, which doesn't happen in any part of the world.
Why is it that it is happening in South Africa? Why do we have this kind of, I don't know, of guts in South Africa? Why is it that it is happening in South Africa? What is it about South Africa that people feel that what is not done anywhere else can be done in South Africa? Dr. Motsoaledi, have you gone through that analysis?
Well, my opinion is that we have given a wrong impression about ourselves. We have given an impression that everything in South Africa goes. You can come illegally, you can come in whatever way, you can demand this and that, you can, you know, there is that belief, and we are trying to cancel that wrong belief. But secondly, there's a belief that South Africa's constitution allows for everything. Everything you want in South Africa, you get it in the constitution. So you can apply for that, which you can't do in other countries. So those are the two beliefs that I think are at play here.
How is the registration or the application, sorry, for other visa regimes for people who hold ZEPs, which is already, has already come to an end, except that we are in this grace period. How is that going? How many people of the 180,000 holders of the ZEP have actually applied?
Well, quite a large number of them are not applying because they've been misled that this matter is going to be thrown out of court. The minister won't go along with it. He's going to drop it. There'll be a lot of pressure put on the minister and he'll forget about this thing. And that's why quite a number of them are not applying. But on our side, regardless of that, I've put up together a team that, again, is chaired by the former director general in the presidency because of his experience in this issue of investigating visas. He is now chairing that team together with the lawyers, mostly from the private sector, who are sitting, who are going to assess these applications of moving to other areas of the Immigration Act rather than through the ZEP. So we are going on regardless of what people are being told, or and we'll advise them. And that's why the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Zimbabwe advised them to please apply, because as a government, he knows exactly how governments are run.
And is there any sense from you as to whether or not the bodies, the organizations that represent Zimbabwean nationals in South Africa that are ZEP holders or perhaps even illegally here, and I heard the foreign minister of Zimbabwe saying that even those that are illegally in South Africa are welcome to go back to South Africa. Is there any conversation taking place with bodies that represent those groupings here in South Africa to say, listen, your government is saying come back home. We are saying stay if you are compliant with certain of our laws. What is the conversation that is taking place between the countries, Zimbabwe and South Africa, to assist those who might want to go back but are afraid?
Well, look, I don't think they are afraid. They are using the issue of being afraid as a ruse. Yes, because if they were afraid, they wouldn't be going home in December or in Good Friday. So the issue of being afraid is just a ruse to make it change our mind or to challenge us in court. We used to communicate with them. We communicated with individual ZEP holders, but those organizations you are talking about, unfortunately, they've taken us to court, and the language we are going to now have with them is a court language, unfortunately. No more conversations, because I'm sure you are aware, they've taken us to court.
Mm. And some of them are attorneys, practicing law in this country. Does the ruling by the court, the Constitutional Court, in any way affect them as per the decision made by the Constitutional Court for foreign attorneys?
No, they can't be practicing law. It's not possible. You only practice law in a certain country if you are a permanent resident of that country or if you are a citizen, whether naturalized or what. But you have to be a citizen or a permanent resident to practice law. That is what the Constitutional Court has ruled. because the people who have applied were saying that part of the Legal Practice Council Act, we demand them to be permanent residents or citizens, must be declared unconstitutional so that they can practice law in South Africa. At the moment, they are not practicing. Unfortunately, the High Court agreed with them and declared that part unconstitutional. Now, remember, any act or any part of an act that is declared unconstitutional must be confirmed by the Constitutional Court before it comes into operation. And this particular one that was declared unconstitutional by the Free State High Court, the Constitutional Court refused to confirm it and say, no, there's nothing unconstitutional about this. People must either be citizens or get permanent residence documents before they practice law.
When are you going to court about the ZEP issue?
October.
Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, thank you very much. We hope that you'll keep us posted on your progress in the whole digitization process. It's a mammoth task, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah.